Utah Jazz in action tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And if you were listening to Lloyd Cole's update, everybody's out. Oklahoma City is only going to play with two guys on the court tonight. This is my two. This is who we're ready to go to battle with. Just two guys. They're on an eight-game losing streak, including the last two against the Sacramento Kings. They won one against the Celtics. And before that, I believe it was a 12. I think either a 12 or a 13-game losing streak. This is not a good Oklahoma City Thunder team. And the Utah Jazz should absolutely run through them. This should be no problem for them. But it's not really the Oklahoma City Thunder game that concerns me. It's a couple of nights. You got to finish out against Sacramento. We'll see what Sacramento's all about. But as far as Oklahoma City is concerned, I think the Utah Jazz should take care of it and dispatch of them. Man, I'm so excited to bring on our next guest. The voice of the Utah Jazz. A great man overall. He is the father of a culinary legend here in the community named DJ Bullerjack, a guy who is a mad scientist behind different types of foods at the store. He's also a multiple-time broadcaster of the year here in the state of Utah. He is my good friend and the legend, Craig Bullerjack. Buller, how are you?
Well, Hans, thanks. That was, kind, my friend. Thank you. Wow. Culinary genius. I raise a culinary genius in DJ. It's amazing stuff.
You've got so much to be proud of.
Oh, I am. Really, I got three great guys, man. I've been blessed. That's for doggone sure.
Well, I'm absolutely bummed because I've only got to meet DJ.
Oh, you got to meet Nick, and then Brody will. He'll wear you out. Brody will wear you out.
Yeah. Buller, I'm glad that you take a few minutes with us today and jump on and give us some thoughts going into this Oklahoma City game. First and foremost, I know Mike Conley is listed as questionable. Do you expect Mike Conley to be back before postseason starts?
Yeah, I do. I do. He spoke to the media today, and that's even a better sign. Again, the Jazz will let him warm up, my guess, and then they'll make a decision prior to tip-off tonight. But if he does play, those two games, I think, really are to his advantage and hands the Jazz because, you know, in my opinion, you know, you sit out nine, you've got to be able to kind of get your legs back and just your, you know, I know he doesn't lack confidence, but I think he just has to get back into that groove, you know, of understanding where he wants to be, where the guys will have to adjust. Because, look, they've been running the show with Joe and Royce and George Niang now. Without Donovan and Mike for nearly a month, and a month for Donovan, and Mike's been out 2+. So yeah, if he goes tonight, it only helps the Jazz as they prepare for the postseason. We know that Donovan won't play in these final two games. Give him another 5+ days when the season ends on Sunday to get ready for next weekend's first round. Which again, Hans, we don't have a clue. How the West is going to turn out. Not only the Jazz, but Phoenix, you know, is a game back, incredible late surge and a couple of calls. I just kind of looked at the TV last night and go, wow. But it is what it is, man. It's the NBA, and we've got quite a run in both the East and the West.
I said this to start the show. The one thing that we learned in the NBA last night is that we still have more to learn in the NBA.
You're spot on there. And just when you think you know it all, no, you don't.
Man, two games away from closing it out. One game for some, and we still aren't 100% sure what we're even going to see in the 7 and 8, what we could possibly see in the play-in. I mean, the Lakers could still bump down, and we could still see some movement there. So it is kind of bizarre to watch it. But as far as the Jazz getting Mike Conley back, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So your two all-stars are out, your two volume shooters, your high usage players. And one thought that I had, trying to get Mike Conley back, maybe tonight, but probably for sure by that Sacramento game, is I would like to work at least one in, not have both of them have to work back in that first playoff game, but at least get Mike Conley implemented back into the team and rotation so it's not as dramatic of a change to work them both back in. Do you disagree or agree with that?
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. If Mike can play these final two games, I think it does help Donovan's transition back, because Mike's been there and will be able to handle the brunt of the ball handling until Donovan gets, back into a groove. Look, you miss upwards to 15 ball games, that's a difficult thing. I mean, that's a fourth of the season or going on it. And so I guess it's about a fourth. So, I think it's very important to get Mike back. And because, he's a primary ball handler. Donovan, of course, touches it multiple times. So is it Joe Ingles. This team, Jordan Clarkson, that's the beauty of the Jazz, is because they constantly are in motion on the offensive end. And I only think it helps the Jazz, with Joe, and it helps Bojan, it helps Jordan Clarkson to get him back on the floor and let them kind of get back to the sense of norm where they were when they were making incredible runs through this league. Now, look, they're 50-20. How can you argue with plus 30 in the win column, right? But, you get a little greedy this time of year where you want the one seed. You want to prove, to the rest of the league that, we belong. And then, of course, the important first-round matchup. As Donovan said last year in the bubble, never again would we lose in round one after a 3-1 lead, obviously, against Denver. So, man, Hans, I tell you, I wish I had a crystal ball. I thought it'd be easier, but I think this is what the NBA wants. They want us talking. They want fans just on the edge of their seats every night here in the last week or two to see how this thing will turn out. Some agree with the plan, others don't. But as I look at it more and more, I think it's kept everybody very much engaged, and the games have much more meaning this time of year than they have in the past. I think we used to argue amongst ourselves about, what are we going to do? You can't rest these guys, and some have already packed and totally checked out, and some are dropping games just so they can be in a better, playoff position. But you throw a couple more teams in the mix who can actually play themselves into the postseason, I think it's really intriguing. I think it's here to stay. I really do. And from what I've seen so far, the league and the fan base seem to be pretty excited about it. Now, some of the players aren't. I think most of the fan base like it.
I think it's incredible. In fact, I'm sitting here scratching my head thinking, we have the potential to see LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers against Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors.
Crazy.
As a play-in opportunity to get to the postseason, which is, it'd be considered basically a non-playoff game. It would be the most incredible, most highly viewed, I'm sure, non-postseason game in NBA history.
Multiple champions, multiple MVP players, absolutely. And maybe one doesn't get in. What if, though? What if, after all the Jazz have been through trying to stay away from the Lakers, they actually draw L.A., LeBron, in round one, which is just like, oh, my goodness. But, look, you're going to have to play through some incredible teams if you're going to make the Western Conference finals and beyond. The difficulty is, if it does turn out that way, it's the first-round matchup, and you're going to have to be on top of it. I don't know at this point in time just the health of both Anthony Davis and LeBron and how durable they're going to be in postseason play, too. So, there's a lot of questions, but it's fun to talk about, and I can't wait for it to get going next weekend. But, hey, two games left. And, look, as Quinn has always said, and I think Jazz fans know this, we've looked at games and kind of put a yawner on it, like, no worries, no hassles. No, I've been through this too many times where teams can only play seven, they dress eight, they play seven, and they've beaten the Jazz. Look, just go about your business, stay focused and just get the job done, and the number one seed is yours. You can't really worry about Phoenix. Last night everybody was holding their breath down the last 2 minutes to see how that one was going to turn out. But, and really, you still have the ability to just take care of yourself, right? You get two games on the road, take care of it. First one's tonight, and then you go into Sacramento, who's playing pretty well the last 2-3 weeks. They've got sharp shooters, and they've got, speedy guards. But still, if Mike's in the, if Mike's in the lineup, it just gives the Jazz other options, and it also loosens up the floor a little bit because Mike's a three-point threat, and he's obviously a great assist man as well.
I have a lot of people ask me, obviously the Utah Jazz are the hottest topic, and I'm sure you can't go anywhere without talking about the Jazz bowler. And I like it. By the way, I don't mind it, and I hope anybody knows out there that I'm 100% approachable. I had a guy stop me. I hesitate to admit this, but I was in Taco Bell grabbing a couple of I like their tostadas, and had a guy grab me, wanted to talk Jazz basketball. And this is a common question. Are the Jazz built for postseason play? And Buller, my thought and my typical comment to somebody is, not without Donovan Mitchell. And so my take is the most important thing right now for the Utah Jazz is to get Donovan Mitchell. They need the fourth quarter closer. You know, against Golden State or against Portland, the last two losses that the Jazz had, I don't think they lose if Donovan Mitchell's on the court and they've got a fourth quarter closer.
Okay. And hands to your point, I agree totally. I mean, look what he does. He's a driver. He's also gets to the free throw line now more than he ever has in his career. And also, he has to be respected with multiple, you know, double teams on occasion, which what? Opens up the floor. It helps Joe, who can catch and shoot instead of try to take a three off the dribble. And I think all those things come into play. Look, you put talent on the floor, it opens up so many venues for other players to improve their game. Donovan and Mike make the rest of the Jazz better because of what they draw in defensively and also what they can accomplish on the offensive end. So to answer your question, yeah, they're built for the postseason, but they have to be healthy like any team. And they've got to be able to take care of. One thing I'm worried about, and this is the thing I keep looking at, is make sure that the lazy over-the-top passes, teams have scouted the Jazz very well. They know they throw the ball multiple times looking for the great open shot, but they also can anticipate that next pass in the passing lane. And once you get a turnover and you run downhill on the Jazz, it's difficult to stop. And also, you got to get some more offensive rebounds. Those missed threes, when they come in bunches like they have lately, you know, you get a defensive rebound by your opponent, and again, they're off and gone because you can't get back quickly enough on defense. So turnovers, TOs, all those, I think, are going to be important parts of how far the Jazz can go in the postseason.
Buller, the last thing I wanted to get into with you is Bojan Bogdanović and his productivity, specifically over the last maybe four or five games since Mike and Donovan have been out. He's really found his stride outside of that Portland game. He's really found his stride, you know, hitting a 48-point game, I think it was, a 32-point game. Can he have the same level of confidence and maybe even the same attempts? Because he's taken looks and he's had the confidence and he's knocked down shots. Can he do what we've seen him do with Mike Conley and Donovan on the court? And do you want him to do what he's done with them off the court?
I want to see him as a combo player, hands as a driver, and then to take his game outside. We were looking at numbers this morning on our Zoom call for pregame and our you know game prep, and he has stepped up in a big way. So has Jordan Clarkson. You look at numbers on the season, you know, he's about 16 points a game, but with Conley and Donovan out, he's up that over 11 points. So he's taken on a huge load, and it probably came at a great time because it was on him to pick up what was missing with Donovan and Mike. So what did he do? If you really go back and study his game after he, you know, made that I thought incredible comment in the locker room saying he's having the worst, you know, drought of his career, and all of a sudden he just went back to the simple way of playing, and that's using his body to go inside, get free throws, and he started scoring, gaining the confidence he needs, and hitting the three. Then he didn't start outside. He went inside, then took his game outside. We know what Clarkson can do. He's a high-volume guy, and he never picks up the dribble. I think Niang has actually improved his game probably during this process too. Hence, he's a much more confident three-point shooter, and you know he spots up in the corner. You know, he's taken a few runs to the rim as well. But you know, but getting back to your question, I think he is a confident player again, despite you know the bad night he had against the Blazers. But I think what he understands now is he doesn't have to just stand out threes all night long. Use his size and go inside, force defenders to foul him. If he can't finish, then at least he's at the free throw line. I think what Matt and Thurl always say, every NBA player I've run across, is if you're having struggles, free throw line can fix you, because what do? You see the ball go. into the net. And once that happens, it kind of turns a switch on. Hopefully that's the case. And Bogey, who didn't play, remember, in the bubble, he may be the X factor in how this thing turns out.
All right, Bowler, I'm just going to set up a scenario. Let's say it's a Saturday at noon, and you and I are in the car together, and I pull into the Alberto's drive-thru. The Alberto's just right off here off the corner. Good burritos over there. And you and I both order a California burrito, which has got, you know, little chunks of steak, and it's got French fried taters in there, and it's got some sour cream and some cheese and a little guac. And they're giving us the bag of these burritos, and I request a couple of packets of ketchup. And I hand you a packet of ketchup to put on your burrito. How do you address that? What do you say to me in that moment?
I would say, hey, Hans, ask him for some tomatillo.
Wow, you're way nicer than I am, Bowler.
Lloyd threw the ketchup back. He threw the ketchup packet, and it hit me right between my nose and eye. And he said, you can take that ketchup packet, and you can, and I won't finish, but he said some terrible things of what I could do with that ketchup packet.
Wow.
I got him the burrito. I brought him the burrito. I said, hey, you might want some ketchup with that burrito. And he hit me in the eye with it.
Wow. Emotional.
Well, Bowler, I don't have a suntan, Bowler. There's more
Lloyd,
pigment to my skin.
You don't like ketchup, I guess. You know,
no, I can do that, but come on.
I like ketchup on fries.
Sure.
You know what? I'll make another admission. I like onions and only mustard on my hot dog.
Okay.
Well, that's not a terrible admission. That's pretty decent.
I see a lot of people just drench those things, man, in ketchup.
Oh,
I
can't
do it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do that. But I'm a mustard guy. I don't know what that says.
But putting ketchup on a burrito, isn't that like the equivalent of putting ketchup on your steak, on your ribeye?
No, Lloyd, stop that. No,
it is.
It is not.
It's very similar.
I've seen people put ketchup on steak. Now, that'd be like for me putting ketchup on a PB&J. That just wouldn't work. You know, that wouldn't go. That would not go.
So you would not accept my ketchup packet to help you?
No, I wouldn't hit you in the eye, but I'd say, Hans, look, let me reach over you here. I'd say, hey, hey, how about the tomatillo? That's what I would do. If we're in the car, I'd be leaning out the driver's side and say, hey, tomatillo.
Okay, Bowler, if you weren't going to get in trouble for assaulting Hans, would you assault him, though? You can assault him. If it was okay and you knew nothing was going to happen to you.
Oh, my, with a ketchup pack?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, look, man, if everyone knows Hans, he's built. He's pretty thick. I don't think a ketchup pack's going to do much harm to him. Maybe four or five. Maybe
we might put that thing right into his forehead.
So yeah. I went around the table to address the situation with Lloyd, and he said, "Touch me, and I sue." And so I'm like, "All right, man, whatever."
Oh, touch me, and I'll sue you. Okay. See all these people around me? I'll testify over a cat. Hey, what happened here, gentlemen? It all started with a ketchup.
Ketchup on a burrito.
Yeah, and a burrito. Yeah, that's great.
As Lloyd lays there unconscious, it all started. By the way, and Lloyd, I don't know if you'd agree with this, but like my 10 out of 10 weekend would include me and Bowler, a couple of burritos in a convertible, just headed up Little Cottonwood Canyon, just talking, you know, shooting a breeze, eating a burrito.
Singing da-da-da.
Hitting a little tomatillo.
Da-da-da.
Da-da-da.
Oh, that brings back memories. 97, 98. Show me the title.
Is that the old commercial?
That's the old commercial, yep.
Da-da-da.
With you and Zippy?
It was Zundel, me, Alema, and Big Dog.
Yeah.
And one car.
Holy moly.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, that's only been a couple years ago. That's not that
only
long.
A couple.
Just a couple.
Hey, by the way, I know it's a shameless plug, but I did talk to Big Dog, and we're going to have him on a new podcast next week, and he's going to be talking exactly what we're discussing right now, how that all happened, and how we picked Big Dog to be part of the Show Me the Title.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I can't wait for that. So hit that tease one more time, Bowler.
Well, it's Courtside Call, and it's on the Jazz Podcast Network, and it's going to debut, I believe the plan is, J.P. Tunga says, on the 20th. And he's kind of the guy that runs that. And I came in and had a great talk. I think next week we'll have up in the next week or two a great combo with Jeff Hornacek as well. Going to do that as well and talk about the finals and what it takes to be a champ.
Don't miss that, man. The big dog, nobody beats him. We've had him on a couple of times. Absolutely adore that man, and we'll be listening. Buller, thank you so much, brother.
Yeah, man. Have a great day. Jazz at 6 o'clock, and let's get it done.
We won't miss it, and we will be listening. There you go. Craig Buller, Jack, the voice of the Utah Jazz on the TV broadcast. Nobody better. I absolutely love that man. Mentor of mine. Take a quick break. We'll come back to Sports Roulette.
Big Show. The Big Show with Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
From The Athletic, he's our friend Sam Amick.
The Jazz are trying to hang on to that top spot in the West. They've lost two in a row now. Some alarms are going off, but they're doing it without Donovan Mitchell, without Mike Conley. We're trying to read into this what it really means.
I don't love it for them. A lot of it's outside of their control. It's been a long time now without Donovan and Conley. That's a problem from a rhythm standpoint. You kind of lost that intimidation factor that I do think was there earlier, where they were doing laps around the bus in the league, and now they seem a little more gettable. But there's a lot of that going around. I mean, it's going to be a pretty interesting postseason from that standpoint.
Catch The Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7. Presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's time to spin the wheel and talk some sports. This is another edition of Sports Roulette with Hans Olsen and Scotty G. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Little bit of news coming across the board here, Lloyd, in regards to the Denver Broncos. According to Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, it is going to be 50-50 reps between Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater to get ready for your starting quarterback of the 2021 season. So the Denver Broncos have a very difficult choice in front of them. Do we go with Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater? How do we want to lose?
Well, it's obvious that Drew Lock is not a modern-day John Elway, as Scotty once said. The next John Elway, I think is what it was.
Looking at this report saying it will be 50-50 reps between Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater. It's like, we will figure out who we're going to lose with this season by giving each 50-50.
Yeah, you got to go. I think you got to go with Teddy.
I hope Scotty's somewhere reading this tweet, shaking his head like, so this is what it's all about. Because I think the NFL season this year, it's got so many great storylines. So we'll pay very close attention to what's going on with the Denver Bronco quarterback situation. I don't think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be in a Green Bay uniform and taking a snap day one with Green Bay.
So essentially, Scotty is going to welch on a bet.
Yes, he's going to welch on a bet.
So
it'll be
okay.
His first.
It's good to know.
And he's also going to be cheering for Teddy Bridgewater. Good luck on that. Could you imagine if Joe Ingles lost his Australian accent and all of a sudden was just speaking Irish?
Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
That girl's not making that up, man. It's an actual...
Okay, I had somebody tweeted me and said, how can you not believe this? Why would she make it up? I don't know, fame? Because people are weird like that?
Well, we are talking about her.
Yeah, we're talking about her. Exactly. Everybody in the country is playing her clip. So
this is an Irish
woman. People don't do stuff like that for fame, I guess. I don't know. What do I know?
Sorry, this is an Australian woman that got a tonsil surgery. When she woke up from surgery, she had an Irish accent, and she doesn't know why. Well, Joe Ingles, his accent has not changed to Irish. But Joe was addressing the conversation of Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, they're out on the court taking those practice shots. Do you ever hassle them a little bit and see when they're going to be coming back?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm getting pressured full court for the whole game, They're the times that I'm like, I wish someone was, one of those two was, one of them was out there with me. But obviously, health is first and foremost, and they need to, both, not just Donovan, Mike as well, both need to be 100% healthy or as close to, obviously, with this kind of time of the year before heading into the playoffs. Would I appreciate and like to play with one of them again or both of them? Like, absolutely, because it makes my job so much easier. Like I said, we've got one of the best, if not the best, healthcare performance team in the league, and that I've been with anyway in my career too. So you just got to kind of trust the process with them a little bit and let them get back when they're healthy.
I'm wondering, to me, as it seems like this season is just dragging on, and it's like, get to the playoffs already. And it sort of reminds me of like the last few games before the All-Star break. And you've had a long stretch of games, travel, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, get to the All-Star break and we'll regroup. Is that a fair assessment to where you guys might be, not only physically but mentally?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit. We haven't sat in the locker room and talked about it, or it hasn't kind of come up with our guys tired or mentally kind of fatigued or whatever. I think a bit of it is kind of what it is, really. Like, we knew however long ago we were going to be in the playoffs. Did we know, we're going to be pretty high up on the ladder somewhere in that, well, I guess when we get to that playoff stage. And I think like you said, with the injuries too, you throw them in and a few of us have been playing a bit more or different roles a little bit. And some days it's a bit more of a grind. It is what it is. The schedule is what it is. And we're just going to go out and finish these two games off, I think, like I've said all year especially to you guys, like we've wanted to just keep getting better and better each game, and we've never talked about being number one or two or three or four or trying to do this or someone's averaging this. It's just been about getting better each game, and we've hit some games that we haven't played well, and we've been able to kind of turn around and fix those things. So it's no different with these next two games. We've got, I'm pretty confident. I think they're both out of the playoffs regardless, these OKC and Sacramento. And for those guys, it's playing for contracts or pride, or the coach is still trying to push them, that development side of things. So we still know that they're going to be two tough games. And for us, it's about, like I said, getting ready for the playoffs and, just keeping that momentum going forward.
So I'm curious what you can say to some of the younger players who are in a spot that you were in a few years ago with the Jazz, where you're on the team, but you're not sure how much everybody loves you or how long you're going to be on the team. You're playing either a little bit, or maybe you're not even sure if you're playing, and it varies night to night, and then you have a rough game. I would think that would just be brutal, as you got the dream and you're trying to, and you're laughing because it is brutal and you were in it. And what can you say to a guy who's, coming off a 1-for-9 night, and you're looking at him like, you may not believe this, dude, but I feel your pain. Been there, done that.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a tough situation. It's everybody on our rosters earned their way onto the roster, whether it be drafted or free agency or whatever, however they got there. And getting on, it might sound silly, but like getting on the roster is probably the easier part, but then actually getting on the court and being consistent and playing consistent minutes and having a role or whatever it is the hard part, really. Especially when you're on the number one or two, top two or three, whatever, however number, how many teams you want to put in that category. But when you're in that top echelon of teams, it's hard to get out there. We're a deep team. We've obviously proved that. We've been able to put guys in at different times through injury, and guys have played well. Maybe they play bad. Maybe it's one of us that plays bad, like whatever the reason is. But it's a tough situation. You've got to kind of I don't want to quote Joel Embiid, but like trust the process a little bit of like the work you're putting in every day. And the coaches see that. The coaches know what you're doing. You want to obviously get an opportunity and try and take advantage of the opportunity. Sometimes it's hard at the end of a game. You might get 2 minutes and they've, like I think last night we put four or five the bench in there at the end. And it's I mean, I think, and then Portland still had their starters in, so they're playing against Dame and these guys. So it's a tough situation, and I don't think I don't know from inside, but I would strongly believe that management isn't judging or making any assumptions on these guys from a minute at the end of a game. It's the work over the course of a season. They see the guys getting in there and putting in extra work, getting extra shots up, getting an extra lift in. When that opportunity comes to play with the rotation players, being ready to do that and contributing. And like you said, I mean, go one for, like, they're not getting black mark or tick or whatever it is on what they shoot from the field. It's the work that they have to put in, and it's frustrating at times because you could go a whole year without really playing meaningful minutes, and this year even tougher without the G League, because they would usually, a lot of our guys would have been with the G League for a lot of the season, and then obviously coming up and down the two ways, and some of our G League guys would have been with us probably at this point of the year with the season finishing with the G League. So it's tough. You've got to almost put your head down, bum up, and just keep going to work every day, and when that opportunity comes, try and take advantage of it.
So you played the Nuggets the other night, and I was glad you beat them, because the number one reason for me is that Austin Rivers really, really bugs me. He acts like he's got a ton of street cred, and he grew up rich. Does he bug you the way he bugs me?
Well, I mean, my honest opinion is I don't really have much thought or concern for Austin Rivers or anyone else on that team or anyone else on any other team. My thoughts and my care and my all that is put into my team and my coaching staff and my family. And yeah, I mean, there's guys that hit a couple shots and might act a little bit different, and then you see the box score the next night, they're 0-for-8 or something. It's pretty funny at times, but no, I don't. Like, it just doesn't. At the heat of the moment in the game, if someone's doing something to try and show us up or not even be disrespectful, but, like, just trying to do a bit extra than what they normally do, I have no problem saying something to these people. But, nah, I have zero concern or effort or anything to other people that aren't on my roster.
Well, he bugs me.
I don't know. Next time. When you do, next time you're allowed, when it gets back to normal and you guys are actually allowed at shoot around, I want you to go to shoot around and I want you to tell Austin Rivers that he really bugs you.
Yeah, okay, I will.
All right.
I'll be waiting for it.
All right, speaking of saying things, I don't know if Royce O'Neal is your best friend on the team. But he's a good friend on the team, Joe, because I'm pretty sure he saved you some money in that Blazer game. In the first half, you went to the hoop, and you thought you got fouled, and you were not going to have a discussion with the referee. You were going to unload on him. And I saw it was a tight shot on TV, so we couldn't see a lot of what was going on the court as the play was ending. It was a timeout. I think people were going back to the bench. All of a sudden, I see Royce's shoulder, and then all of Royce slide between you and the ref. How much did he calm you down in that moment? How much did you think, oh, yeah, Renee's going to be mad if I get another tee?
Oh, it's funny because I got a tee a couple games ago, mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it was, and Renee was at the game, and I was walking off, and obviously I know where she sits. She sat in the same seat for 7 years now or whatever, and I like looked up real quick, and she was shaking her head at me. This is pretty funny. I think I'll buy him a soda or a sparkling water or something today when we take off today. But no, I still got the the verbal part of what I needed to say out. I just wasn't able to get any closer to him. And so maybe it did save me some money, but he didn't hear me from as closely. But even Dane was like, did you just not hear what he said to you? And I was like, no, I was talking to myself. I wasn't talking to the referee.
Nice, nice.
Good one.
Nice, good.
There you go, Joe Ingles from earlier today. Good stuff. Just yesterday, taking us onto the court, talking about Donovan and Mike and some of the things moving forward. We'll take a quick break. We broke some news earlier here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone in regards to the Utah Jazz in the postseason. We'll tell you what that news was coming up next.
This is DJ and PK.
And to think that as far as Joe, I'm largely responsible. I may not win any awards, Dave, but it gives me a sense of great pride knowing, yeah, I don't feed the naked, but in a sense, I've helped facilitate a connection. So I can feel good about it, you know, a little bit. Not quite like you, but I think I can feel good about it.
You're not feeding the hungry, but you are entertaining the bored. So there's that. There's somebody stuck in traffic, stressed, the weather's bad, you know.
So what do I do?
You entertain the bored.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
John Wilner is going to join us coming up at 1:05, so just here in a few minutes, so keep it tuned. If you're interested in the Pac-12 commissioner hire, John Wilner will help us kind of make sense of everything, get his thoughts and opinions on it, as he's had time to digest it. I was watching him tweet yesterday as the news was coming down, and you could tell he was...
Well, it was him that was like, I think I know who this is now. Let me confirm by... It's so out there that I got to confirm with like four sources just to double check.
Yeah,
I think he had Ralph Russo that put it out there first.
He said that he thinks he's being played or he's being tricked.
Right.
He didn't think this would be the name. And then he said 99% of people would never have heard of this name. And of course, he was absolutely right. So he's had time to digest it. We'll talk to John Wilner coming up here in just a couple of minutes. The breaking news from the Utah Jazz a little bit earlier today, in fact, about 10:30, it was released that the Utah Jazz will now be allowing 13,000 fans into Vivint Arena for the opening tip of the playoffs. 13,000, that's just 5,000 short of a full house. So the tides are really turning here in Vivint Arena, and of course, they're going to try to keep protocols in place, and they're going to keep all their safety measures in place. But 13,000 fans here in Vivint Arena cheering their guts out. They're going to need to be loud, and I'm sure they will be loud. But whether it's the Lakers or it's Golden State in the first round for the Utah Jazz, they are going to have a distinct advantage with home court advantage. 13,000 fans going crazy. My guess is, in California, Golden State might be around a couple of thousand. The Lakers around a couple of thousand. But when they come to Vivint Arena, they've got to deal with 13,000 maniacal screaming Jazz fans. I love it, Lloyd.
13,000 burrito ketchup eating fans.
Stop it.
Fans.
Stop it.
Actually, it's well under that. But
the poll is getting deleted.
Just maniacs.
I'm deleting.
Sociopaths, if you will.
They're not sociopaths. There's a lot of people that like ketchup on their burritos.
As we've learned, no. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up because that's been a topic way too much today. And I failed.
It has.
How cool, that's 5,300 short of full capacity.
Yeah, I know, man. It's right there.
5,300.
It's creeping up there. I think by the time, as long as the Jazz advance past the first round, which... That's much easier said than done. Let's be honest. Donovan Mitchell is going to have to be full steam ahead. And whether they match up with Golden State or the Lakers, come on, well, let's be real. They're going to have to be full steam ahead. Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley are going to have to be on the court.
It's been nice getting players, you know, reps and seeing what others can do. But and they've been able to – they've played better than I probably thought they would have been without those two. But they're going to need those guys for the playoff push.
Got to have them for the playoff push, especially with the two that are you're currently staring down right now. It's a little bit nerve-wracking. Can't believe this is how postseason is working out. But that's how it's working out. John Wilner next.